is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
A Tale of Two Cities. Gothenburg, Sweden. Bristol, United Kingdom, England. I welcome Joel Budd, a commentator on Britain for The Economist magazine. And Joel has done us all the favor of introducing us to these two cities, Gothenburg and Bristol, with the magical word growth. Growth is a word that's routinely used now, not only in Britain, but also it's a magical word in the United States, especially during time of presidential elections. But we come now to Gothenburg and Bristol because they compare, their metropolitan areas compare in GDP, they compare in population size, and they certainly compare in population growth these last years. Joel, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much for joining. First, we'll go.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Bristol, England. And this is all new to me. It has a mayor, but the mayor's office is about to be discontinued, replaced by the mayor of West England. You tell me there are 10 of these metropolitan organizations. What is a mayor of West England? What does that mean? Good evening.
Yes, Bristol has a funny situation of having two overlapping mayors. So the city of Bristol, which has 500,000 people, so making it about as big as Miami, has a mayor. But there is also a mayor of the west of England, which is an area, a larger area, centered on Bristol. And what is happening is that in order to get rid of this overlap, the city mayor is being abolished. So we'll just have a council running the city. And the mayor of the West of England will remain. We can think of the mayor of the West of England as a kind of metropolitan mayor, really.
Metropolitan mayor. Now, these are port cities with elaborate harbors, and I've only ever looked at the photographs. However, Joe will help me to understand. Bristol's much older. It says in my research, it's 11th century, and it's charming port city through the Renaissance and then into the Industrial Age. Gothenburg is much younger, 17th century. However, today, the question is, Gothenburg is growing, and Bristol is also growing, but much slower or not at all. There's the puzzle that Joel investigates for us. Let's go to the success of Gothenburg. It has a mayor, but the mayor is called a municipal council chair, head, Axel Josephson. Does he offer a reason why Gothenburg is doing well today? Does he see one magical formula, Joel?
Well, I think the crucial thing that he said to me was in answer to the very first question I asked him, which was, and do the city authorities have the powers that would be necessary to solve your own problems? And he thought about this for a second, and he said, yes, in general, we do, actually.
Solve their own problems in terms of transportation, housing, taxes? They can make all those decisions in the city?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. He then went on to describe the things that the city and the surrounding region do not control. And it's quite a short list, actually. They don't control policing. That's handled by the Swedish national government. And they don't control welfare to work schemes. They have less control over certain types of state school. But they control pretty much everything else. And as a result, they can determine their own destiny.
Yes, they have transportation all solved. I watched looked at the photographs of their weaving highways to connect to the rest of Sweden. But they also are keen on combining their bus routes, their tram routes, and their port facilities, and their light rail and heavy rail. So it's all thought through without competing ticket sellers. They also have a plan. This flabbergasted me, Joel. They have a plan for 2070. Did I read that right? 50 years out?
Yes, that's right. Yes, they do indeed have a completely integrated transport system. So if you're standing on a ferry and you look at your phone, you can tell when the tram is going to arrive at the station, and that station will be right by the ferry terminal. And then if you need to transfer from a tram to a bus, it will again tell you when the bus is leaving, and the bus stop will be right by the tram stop. It is a completely integrated system. Of course, it's not absolutely perfect. You know, there are parts of the city that are underserved and there are pinch points and so on, but it is managed as an integrated system by the city and by the regional government.
It strikes me that the driving force of this is they get to keep a lot of their own money. My notes here say 21% local tax, 11% regional tax, and only the really well-to-do, the upper income, are taxed nationally. So it's Gothenburg's money. They keep Gothenburg's money. They spend it on what they care about. So they're keen on success. That would make sense. So let's go to Bristol. Bristol has, as I said, comparable size, comparable GDP. But the transportation, from what you write and from the pictures I saw, there's no tram. That means light rail. And they have not integrated their transportation system, or is it just all buses? How do they think about it?
Yes, so they really have a kind of decent bus system. They have no light rail, but the bus system is not actually an integrated network. There are several different bus companies that are supplying different services within Bristol, and they don't particularly coordinate with each other. The buses also don't really coordinate with the train system. So there's a train system that has a few stops within Bristol, not an enormous number. And that is sort of divorced from the bus system. And so the one demonstration of this is that it's a 20-minute walk from the main bus station to the main railway station.
When it comes to housing or building, this looks to be the major distinction to make, Joel. For example, in Gothenburg, they're working with the very famous worldwide part of the solution of the virus, AstraZeneca, which is growing very fast. Its plants outside of Bristol, its laboratories, its housing for its high-income people. Whereas in Bristol, they have a no-build zone. My note says 717 square kilometers. What does no-build zone mean, and why do they have such a thing?
Yeah, so after the Second World War, Britain designated green belts around its major cities, and Bristol has one. And these green belts are much, much larger than the cities they surround. For example, the one around London is three times as large as London. The one around Bristol is so big that it actually sprawls around Bath as well, you know, very famous, very, very beautiful city where all the Jane Austen novels are set, to the east of Bristol. And in those green belts, it is almost impossible to build homes, and it's quite difficult to build offices and factories as well.
That's a major distinction. Do they see it? Does Bristol see? Does Dan Morris, the mayor of West England, understand that no-build zone inhibits his growth?
Yes, he does. But there are very few votes in British cities in building on the Greenbelt. For the most part, local people tend to want them to be protected. And they see no very good economic reason why they should permit lots and lots of building on the Greenbelt. And that is the big difference, I think, between Bristol and Gothenburg. In Gothenburg, people can definitely see the point of it, because if you build more homes, you have more taxpayers. You know, the city will have better schools, it will have better transport system, and so on.
So the people of Bristol are satisfied with their gem of an 18th century city, a winding ways. They're satisfied with it. And do they know that in order to grow, in order for prosperity for the future, they need to provide more housing for high income. I'm not just talking about affordable housing. I'm talking about the high end stuff, what we call McMansions. Do they talk about it?
They wouldn't see that as housing development as helping them, really. They would see it as a cost. They'd see it as something that took away open space, that increased traffic congestion. They wouldn't see it as something that actually benefited them. And they are right in that perception, because adding more people, adding more taxpayers on the outskirts of Bristol only helps the central government. Because, you know, taxes in the UK are paid almost entirely to the central government, not to local government.
You take us to the solution, I think. Or let's talk about the challenge first. I made a note from your presentation. In Gothenburg, the local tax is 21%, the regional tax is 11%, and only the high end pays the national tax. Whereas in Bristol's, my note says only 6% is paid local tax. Everything comes from London. And London, I think you use the metaphor of skin in the game for Gothenburg. Does Bristol understand that the money flowing from London, what did you have, £123,000 for public toilets and three got built? That's good enough for government work is what we say here. Do they say the same thing in Bristol?
I've never heard that expression. That's a wonderful expression there.
Do they understand what the problem is? If you wait for the king, you'll wait forever.
Many people in Britain understand what the problem is. This is a strange feature of Britain, that it's widely understood, including by senior politicians from both major political parties, that Britain is too centralized, that we expect the central government to do too much, that we need to give more power, including more tax raising power, to cities and regions. And yet it simply doesn't happen, or it happens so incredibly slowly that you can't really notice the difference.
I'm speaking to Joel Bodd, who's a correspondent for The Economist magazine, and we're covering Tale of Two Cities, one in Bristol, England, the west of England, now called the mayor of the west of England, and another Gothenburg, Sweden, which is a very large city, but it's not the capital. Its relation to the capital by rail. One, Gothenburg, is growing. The other, Bristol, is growing very slowly or not at all. And when we come back, what is to be done? And one of the things we have to deal with is the personality of the political voices in Bristol and Gothenburg. I'm John Batchelor.